tighter than a bomb as she stepped before the video cameras. There was no one else in the studio. She had chosen to give her first political speech from the communications center, alone, without a clack of an audience to applaud her words. "I don't have a following," she realized. "Not like Malcolm. Not yet." Pancho, Wanamaker, Wonderly, and several other friends had offered to come with her, but Holly had told them all that their presence would only make her more nervous. In truth, the only person she wanted to have there was Raul, but he hadn't said more than 6 words to her that morning in the simulations lab when the power failure had struck. So now, she stood nervously in front of a trio of cameras with their unblinking lenses focused on her. Berkowitz was smiling benignly at her from behind the central camera. There had been a couple of other technicians in the studio when Holly had come in, but they seemed to have disappeared now. "Your introduction is pre-recorded. I'll set it going and then give you a 5-second countdown," Berkowitz said. "When I point to you like this," he aimed a stubby forefinger at her, "it'll be time for you to start." "Okay," Holly said. "I click." There was a monitor screen beside the camera on her right. Holly thought she looked terrible, strong tight and eyes staring like a skinny, frightened waif. Slightly to her left, another monitor displayed the words of her speech in oversized capital letters. The seconds dragged by, until at last Berkowitz began. 5, 4, 3, 2, he pointed dramatically. Holly tried to make a smile as she began. "Good evening. I'm Holly Lane, and I'm running for the office of Chief Administrator. Until yesterday, I was your Director of Human Resources, but I was fired from that job, probably because the guy who's currently Chief Administrator got sore that I decided to run against him." She took a breath, saw her next paragraph scrolling up on the monitor, then focused her eyes on Berkowitz, rocking up on his toes and down again as he smiled and nodded encouragement to her from behind the center camera. "I'd like to tell you why I decided to run against my former boss. It's because of a certain married couple who came to me to ask permission to have a baby. They made me realize that there must be a lot of women in this habitat of ours who want to have children. Now, I know we live in an enclosed environment with limited resources, and I know we all signed on to the Zero Population Growth Protocol when we first joined this habitat. But I feel that it's time to examine that protocol and see if there isn't some way we can allow our population to expand within the limits of our resources naturally. More than half of our habitat is empty, unpopulated, unused. I believe that with care, we can allow our population to grow. I believe that we have the intelligence and the courage to allow controlled population growth. I don't think that this habitat of ours should continue to be barren and childless." Berkowitz continued to nod and smile at her. The monitor had scrolled to her final wrap-up paragraph. But Holly ignored it and blurted, "And I also believe that there's absolutely no acceptable reason for power outages like we had this morning. That's inexcusable. We need to pay much more attention to the equipment that keeps us alive. That's all I've got to say, for now. I'll have more later on. Thank you." Holly thought she could hear Everly's howl of anguish from halfway across the village.
19 February 2096, midnight. "And where have you been?" Urbain snapped, coolly stepping to the chair before his desk and sitting in it. Yolanda Negroponte brushed a tress of ash-blonde hair from her face and said, "A group of us had a little political discussion over supper." Habib, already seated in front of Urbain's desk, looked puzzled. "What group?" "The women of the scientific staff," Negroponte replied, smiling faintly. "Didn't you watch Holly Lane's speech earlier this evening?" Shaking his head, Habib answered, "I was here, going over these ghost tracks." "Where you should have been," Urbain said sternly to Negroponte. "A break for supper should not take 3 hours." "As I said," Negroponte replied, unflinching, "we had a political discussion over our meal." Before the two of them fell into an actual argument, Habib pointed to the display on the wall screen and said, "We've been trying to piece together these ghost tracks from Alpha." The display of Titan's surface was the only light in Urbain's office. As Negroponte turned in her chair to look at the screen, Urbain noticed that Habib was watching her, not the smart wall. She is a well-proportioned woman, Urbain noticed. Slightly fleshy, big as an Amazon. Habib seemed fascinated by her. If those faint traces in the ground actually are the remains of Alpha's tracks, Habib said, maybe we can use them to find the beast. Urbain bristled at his if, and even more at his referring to Alpha as a beast. Negroponte was shaking her head, which made that troublesome lock of hair fall across her face again. There's something else involved here, she said. Something more important. Urbain felt his brows rise. More important than finding Alpha? If those smooth areas are the remains of Alpha's tracks, then the question is, what smoothed the tracks? Habib said, you mentioned this before, the idea that something is actively smoothing over the beast's tracks, something in the ground. Actively smoothing the tracks, Urbain repeated. Within a matter of days, said Negroponte, perhaps only hours. Despite himself, Urbain felt intrigued. It could be erosion from rainfall, or something tectonic. Geological, Habib mused. What geological force could do that? Negroponte shook her head. I don't think it could be geological, and not weathering, not on this time scale. You believe it's biological? Urbain murmured. What else could it be? Habib said, we'd better get the bio team in on this. He scrambled to his feet. Negroponte got up beside him. Urbain absently noted that she was slightly taller than he. They headed for the door. It's past midnight, she said to Habib. So what? He replied, almost laughing. They'll want to get started on this right away. They can sleep some other time. The two of them left the office, leaving Urbain sitting there, his mouth hanging open, his mind spinning. But we must find Alpha. That is our primary task. And we have only another day or so, perhaps only hours, before she goes into hibernation. But he was now alone, talking to no one but himself.
Eberle had settled down in his favorite easy chair to watch Holly's speech with smug assurance that she would trip over her own feet, but her crack about the power outage infuriated him. As if it's my fault, he raged, pacing up and down in his apartment. At last he decided that he had no choice. He had to fire Aronson. Someone's head had to roll. He had to show the voters that he was doing something. I'll reorganize the maintenance department, Eberle said to himself. I'll put Timoshenko in charge of the entire department, with Aronson's number two under him. And the first job for Timoshenko will be to find out what caused that power outage and make certain it doesn't happen again. Not until the election's over, at least.
Tamiko and Hideki Mishima were so excited by Holly's speech that they couldn't sleep. She really wants to help us, Tamiko said to her husband, as they lay together wide awake in the darkened bedroom. Yes, but she will run into a lot of opposition, Hideki warned. Many people will be afraid of a population explosion that could ruin us. They'll want to cling to the ZPG protocol. You think so? I'm certain of it. Tamiko propped herself on one elbow and peered down at her husband's face. Then we must take positive action. Bring people together to support Ms. Lane. Organize into a political force. We? He asked doubtfully. Women who want to start having babies, she replied. Then, laughing, she tousled his hair. Don't worry, darling. You won't have to do a thing. This is my responsibility.
Oswaldo Yanez had watched Holly's speech while sitting beside his wife on the sofa in their living room. He had paid careful attention to every word, then dismissed her speech from his mind. He got up from the sofa, went to the office he had created out of an alcove in their bedroom, and spent the remainder of the evening studying the latest medical bulletins from Earth and Selene. The research reports from Earth concentrated on public health efforts to contain epidemics of diseases long thought eradicated. But Ebola, tuberculosis, and even plague were on the rise in new strains that resisted antibiotics. Even in the major cities, with their sanitized buildings and public water and sewage